This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 5, Episode 28, Low Tech Nicknames. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we go off on all kinds of tangents, including talking about player nicknames, even if they're nothing to do with cricket. But we also get some cricket into. We talk about captaincy. We find out what happens if you're losing sleep because you can't bowl off spin. And we talk about low-tech tricks to help monitor performance. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide to coaching and playing better cricket, or coaching better cricket, or playing better cricket, or anything to do with better cricket. My name is David Hinchliffe, and I look after things here, but I'm not alone. I'm joined by a great panel this week. First of all, on the line and back in the UK, so hopefully we won't have any problems like we had last week with the connection. Fingers crossed, touching wood. It's Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garrus.
Hello, all. I hope you can hear me this week.
Yeah, well, we could hear you last week. It's just we could only hear about two-thirds of what you said, and it was very difficult to grab anything from what you were saying. So,
some said it was the best show ever. That's what I've read.
Norman Collier impressions all round. And that laugh you heard is from Sam Lavery, who is the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. Hello, Lavers.
Hello, how are you?
Very good. Fine standing job you did last week.
It was it's hard work without Gareth, isn't it? So it's hard. Don't get me wrong. It's hard work with him. But it's hard work without him.
Makes it look easy. we've had some pretty interesting cricket go on over the last few days with the India England Test match. All kinds of things going on, and in fact, we've had a couple of articles at the start of this week where we talk about different things like Dhoni standing back to the spinners and a modern take on leg theory that worked pretty well for India. But the thing I wanted to focus on was captaincy and how a lot of people have been saying, especially about Alistair Cook, that he's not a natural captain and he never will be a captain who's good enough to captain England. So it got me thinking about captaincy in general, and can you make yourself into a good captain? Or is it one of these things where you say, well, you're born to be able to do it, you know, like Mike Brearley, or you just can't, and no matter how hard you try, you're never going to make yourself one. What do we think?
Well, I don't think you're born to do it. I think you develop characteristics over time, and you develop experiences over time that enables you to be successful at it. I don't think Mike Brearley was born to be a captain. His upbringing and his interest in psychology and psychiatry helped him significantly when he was in the job. But those are things that he developed, as opposed to being born with those skills. And I think the best leaders are always the ones who take a real interest in that, rather than just playing the game. And that's probably where Alistair Cook is. He's been a fantastic, masterful developer of his own batting over the course of the past 20 years, and certainly since I've known him as 15, he's worked relentlessly on his batting and got to a stage where he's scored 25 Test match hundreds and will go on to score a significant number more as well. But certainly, I mean, I wouldn't say I was the world's best captain, but leadership's always been something that's been inspiring to me. And I spent a lot of time listening to the leaders, the Mark Nicholases, the Malcolm Marshalls, the David Gowers of this world when I was growing up at Hampshire, rather than being in the next wedge, which is probably where Cookie has been for the most part of his career. And as a result, I wasn't anywhere near as good a player as Cookie. But in terms of leadership, probably a little bit more natural at it. And that's the thing that is difficult when you're captaining against Michael Clarke and you're captaining against Dhoni. They're very natural at making decisions and very natural at communicating with others. And sometimes you look at Cookie, who's a masterful batter, and you just think that maybe that's a bit forced, or he's trying to be something that he's not, and it's been exposed.
I remember when Graham Swann was made captain of England for a couple of 2020 games, that he said he'd captained every game that he played. And I think that's the thing, maybe that is a natural thing or a born thing, is that you have that desire to want to do it, you know, over other things. You know, it's very easy to play a game of cricket and just drift along and do exactly what the captain says and not think about it. And then as Graham Swann said, captain every game they play, whether they're captain or not.
I think a really good example of that is Ricky Ponting, who is in a similar boat to Alistair Cook in that, if you think about Alistair Cook's upbringing, he's, as with Ricky Ponting, as with a stream of world-class players, which Alistair Cook definitely has been, you spend your lifetime as the young player, don't you? You're always the youngest in the side. You're playing above your age group. You're playing against older players, with older players. Mm. You make a county side, or get your contract to the youngest in the squad at 17, 18, whatever it might be. And ultimately, you're the young one, so the leadership roles don't come along a lot. And that's where, as Gareth mentioned there, that spent all his time in the nets, because that was all he had to do. His job was always scoring runs, and being the youngest, leadership isn't a big thing, and it's not something that he was prioritising at the time. And one thing that Ricky Ponting talks about, which is interesting, and it follows the Graham Swann line, is that he felt like every single game, almost every single ball, he felt like he wanted to captain it, and he was ready at the drop of a hat. Even when he was making his Australia debut, he was ready for the captain to walk off the field injured and then to say, "Ricky, you're taking over," and he was ready to go. And he felt like he was always captaining every side, and he was always ready to go. And that was one of the reasons that they gave him the captaincy of Tasmania at such a young age, on a short-term basis, just because they knew that the Australian captaincy was coming up, because he'd made it clear to them that that's what his thinking process was, or his thought process was, all the time. So I'd imagine that there's a bit of a parallel between the two, in that they were both young players who were ahead of their years in terms of their batting skill. But it seems that Ponting obviously went one way and really focused on his long-term development as a leader as well, and he was always in that mindset of what can I do for the team, or what could the team be doing better, where Alistair's focus was very much on his batting and how can his batting improve, which has obviously done him led to a great deal of success over the years as well.
So if a player is listening to this and they perhaps find themselves in a similar situation to Cook, in that they've been concentrating on one part of their game very hard, not really thought much about captaincy, but they find that they get the captaincy a little bit older, how do you go about trying to improve your ability as captain while also being captain?
Well, I think, you know, captaincy comes into various bits, isn't it? There's communication, and there's no doubt in my mind, having seen Alistair grow up, his communication is good. You know, he's a very popular member of any team that he plays. He's always got time for people. So communication to me isn't the real challenge with Cookie. I think one of the Cookie's challenges has been decision-making, and tactical decision-making in particular. So if you're somebody that falls into a boat that isn't your natural forte, what somebody like Strauss did was find somebody within his setup that he could go to when his plans maybe are a bit muddled, or he doesn't know where to go next. And that person was out the box man, Mr. Stuart Broad. And he'd always go to Broad and he'd say, "Come on, Broadie, take a look at it through your eyes. See the situation as you see it and tell me what's going through your head." And I think it's really important to have that kind of person there. And it doesn't have to be, you know, I'm sure Cookie's asked Stuart Broad exactly the same questions in the last few months. It might be somebody completely different. It might be a Joe Root. It could be somebody who's just come into the setup, possibly. It could be a Moeen Ali or whoever. But find somebody who will give you a different perspective, because that's what captains lose when they're under pressure sometimes, is that perspective. And certainly when I've talked to Strauss about how he managed that side up from the West Indies, where he took over, all the way through to winning the Ashes and so on and so forth, that was one of his key things, was go to Broadie. You know, he had Matt Pryor next to him, and he had Graham Swan next to him, and that was fantastic. But when he needed to go out the box, he went to Stuart Broad. And you've got to recognise whatever people can give you in terms of decision-making and tactics.
OK, let's wrap up this section with the yes-no round. Three questions that can only be answered yes or no to, no matter how much more that the panel want to say. I'm in charge of the questions this week, so here we go. First question. You can stand back to the spinner.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question. Give bowlers a break. Let them rough up as well as shine the ball.
No.
No.
Third question. You can win at all costs and stay within the spirit of cricket.
Yes.
No.
Time now for the mailbag. A couple of questions that get sent into the show by eager listeners or eager readers to the Pitch Vision Academy website. And we answer those questions. Then we choose a prize, which is an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. Now, you can send in those questions to us using coach@pitchvision.com. And we've got some other ways that you can send them in as well. So wait till the end of the show if you want all the ways to get in touch with us. But let's have a look at the first question this week, and it's from Vipal. Vipal says, I'm a 17-year-old off-spinner, and it's off-season in Australia right now, and wet too. Because of that, I mostly end up bowling in my house in front of the mirror. I've tried several actions, and I've seen various actions as off-spinners, Graham Swan and Saccolay and people like that. I'm trying to perfect myself. However, after several days, I start questioning my action and run-up that I was happy with. Due to this, I'm always self-conscious and can't sleep properly. No joke. Is this harming me? If it is, how can I get settled on a good action? How do you gather momentum from your run-up to your point of delivery? Now, talk about a cluttered mind. You can't even sleep.
Well, if you can't sleep, then that, yes, that is a problem, because if you're anything like me, you need to have your sleep. Otherwise, you turn into a right grumpy so-and-so.
Yeah.
So first things first, we need to get you back sleeping, and you've obviously got a really analytical brain, and you want to get better, which is a fantastic asset to have. But I would also go back to the fact that all three of those guys that you mentioned in your question do things very differently, because it's in keeping with them and how they've probably always bowled. I should imagine there's been very little shift in their bowling action over the course of time. And at some stage in their life, they would have been somebody who was just doing it for fun playing recreationally rather than thinking about getting 400 or 500 test wickets. So I would go back to what you do and probably don't even pick up a ball. Don't even stand in front of a mirror. Wait until the sun shines a little bit and then get outside and just do what you did previously. In terms of gathering momentum, there are several ways, and actually those guys are very good examples of people who gather momentum in different ways. So if you think about Graham Swan would have quite a fast approach, and his arms would be moving whilst he's in the last few strides of his approach, and his arms were gathering momentum at that point. So he did it as a consequence of his arms moving as he was approaching the wicket. Somebody like a Saccolay would stay on his back leg, but get very sideways, stay on his back leg a little bit longer and create torque, and then throw his right side through and get the ball to spin both ways as a result of doing that and being very chest on at release. So there are different ways of doing it. You look at Vittori. Vittori used to come from quite an angle and used to create torque against that angle to get the ball to go into the stumps and then hold its line and occasionally spin away. So there are different ways to gain momentum. It's not just about run-up pace. That is one of the options that are available to you. But the angle of the approach and then how you can then unravel a body using torque is another one. And in Swanee's case, gaining momentum by using the arms in the approach to start that process off, so you're not having to do it solely in your action, is also a really good one. Some bowlers in the past leant back and then came forward. Something completely different to Swanee, whose body position was forward throughout his run-up and then into his bowling action. So there's loads of different ways to do it. But most importantly, you know, I'd probably forget about bowling for a little bit. Watch some cricket on the box at the moment, but don't overanalyze it. Watch some AFL or some rugby league or whatever's going on in your neck of the woods at the moment, and then start afresh as and when you've got your energy levels back because you've been sleeping a bit better, and away you go.
Yeah, it's a bit of a breakthrough to some players to learn that, especially if you're an analytical type player, to learn that people move differently in different ways, and there isn't one way of doing things that will necessarily work all the time for everybody. So it's quite a nice, that's almost a release, isn't it? So instead of trying to be perfect, it's trying to be, as soon as I can find the right person to copy, I'll be perfect. You can find your own way, and that's one of the big messages of this show, I think.
Well, yeah, it has to be. And what you've done there is you've almost answered it yourself by giving three examples of spinners that do things very differently. So seek solace. If you are going to watch those bits of footage on YouTube, then seek solace in the fact that they all do things a little bit different. And as a result of that, that gives you the confidence to just do it your way. What they have done is they've mastered their way. And that's the real asset that all good players and all good bowlers have, is that they master their own way of going about it.
I'd agree with everything that's been said. I think you have to, as Gareth says there, in identifying three bowlers, you could have listed 15 bowlers, but that tells you that there's not one way of doing it. You've got to find an action that suits you, find a rhythm that suits you. There might be little elements. Once you've developed your own action that you're comfortable, you might notice little things in the way someone releases the ball, or the way someone, or little specifics that maybe you can trial, but you don't want to copy someone's action. You've got to get your body moving the way it wants to move and the way it's happy moving. So I'd put them all aside for now. Wait till you can go and have a bowl properly, which sounds like you probably can't at the moment, but having a rest every now and then is a great thing. And then just work on how you can be the best bowler. If you can get the ball spinning in the air in the right direction and you can be repetitive in what you do, then you look like you've got a decent shot of doing pretty well.
Now, you said there, just put it all to one side. And for people who think a lot about things, that can be quite hard to do. It's to me, it's the equivalent of saying to someone who can't juggle, here's three balls, now just juggle. What advice would you give to someone who finds it hard to put things aside, as it sounds like we've got in this case?
Well, I can relate to that because I'm very much like that myself. And I think it's a case of finding something else to do. You have to replace that thinking time with something else. It's not good enough to just say, don't do anything. I mean, I'm the worst. I was on holiday last week, and it was the first time I've ever sat on the beach for more than about 20 minutes without actually doing something else.
Yep.
And the way I did it was get stuck into some books, write some articles, and prepare for my house move. And I could actually stay on the beach and do it, but I can't normally do that sort of thing. I can't just do sod all. It doesn't work within me, and it sounds as if you need to keep your mind going in a similar sort of way. So there are a million books. Even if you're not a reader, I'm not particularly a reader, get stuck into some books and read about psychology, read about whatever, read about some fictitious detective, watch some films, whatever the case may be. Just fill your mind with something else. And that will help, I can assure you. And it's something that I've battled with heaps. For the life of me, I could never get rid of the work that I was planning to do the next day. It was always in my head, and I used to sleep very badly. But I've started to build some strategies in about just reading a bit and reading something which doesn't necessarily float my boat initially. And I've started to get interested in reading just normal stories, which is something that I haven't done since I was about seven. So, and that's really helped me to take my mind off of what's going on inside there, put it to bed, get some sleep, wake up the next morning, and then I can attack any challenge that comes to me in a fresher fashion.
Yeah, well, as Gareth says there, it's finding a way of occupying and distracting your mind and putting it into something else. So whether or not you could try and invest a winter in batting, or is that too close to thinking about cricket still and what's something you want to put separate as well, or whether or not he could go and do that, and you can have a young player just working on a different angle of the same thing. So, right, he's going to try and get a bit fitter and a bit stronger, or he's going to try and develop another facet of his game, or whether or not we just want to take someone away from cricket completely for a bit of time. And that's going to depend on the individual and the circumstances they're under. But there are always different ways you can go and improve your game without focusing on the main area that's maybe distracting you and consuming your thoughts a little bit too much. But depending on the person and the situation, you may have to just try and step away from that completely. Garra's reads a nice little story, which sounds like a good option. And as he said, importantly there, it's something that he hasn't done for years. And you're probably going to have to find something if you're of that type of personality where you get a bit consumed by specifics. Then you probably are going to have to go with something that's a little bit outside the box and something you wouldn't normally do, because by the sounds of it, a large portion of your thinking is probably spent on cricket and your bowling. So it will have to be something that isn't on the top of your list of things you'd want to do, but it might be something that becomes a pleasant distraction along the way.
It's interesting you say about list there, Labours, because one of the things that was a great relief to me a few years ago is when I got a system for understanding what was on my mind and trying to get it out of my mind and get it into another system. And that could be something as simple as just getting a great wad of paper and writing down everything that you need to do, all your thoughts, everything that is on your mind, because your mind is not very good at holding lots of different ideas all at once. Write it all down on a piece of paper, and once you've got it all out of your brain, just go out and have dinner or something, because you feel so much better just writing it down. There's something about the act of writing things down that just helps you come to terms with it all, even if it's just a big pile of stuff. It just means that your brain doesn't have to hold all those thoughts anymore, because you've got them captured on a piece of paper. And that's kind of the start of a system called Getting Things Done by David Allen, which is a really good sort of organizational system that you might want to adopt completely, or you might want to just take some simple idea from it, like write everything down. That when you think of it, write it down, because then you don't have to hold it in your head anymore, and that might help unclutter your mind as well. Next question's from Wolf. Good old Wolf. He's always got his mind in cricket. Speaking of someone who's always thinking about cricket, and Wolf's come through with a question that says, Makhairan Teeny, former right-arm fast bowler, while commenting on the radio for day two of the Sri Lanka versus South Africa test match, revealed that the soft noises made by the necklaces he wore when playing gave him feedback on the rhythm and fluidity of his bowling run-up. This immediately captured my imagination and continues to fascinate me. I wonder what low-tech tricks any of you might have seen or used to help monitor performance.
Very similarly, one thing that is a really simple one to talk about, which is with fast bowlers and trying to maintain alignment, is the simple marks that are left on the floor throughout run-ups and jumping. So that's one I'll throw in there straight away.
That's a goodie, and one that is brilliant, isn't it? Particularly when the weather's a bit wet, where you can really see those footprints as somebody comes in, and also then see the follow-through as well. So that's fantastic feedback. I like that, Sam. One of the ones that Malcolm Marsh used to talk about was listening to your foot contacts through the crease. So he was very keen on rhythm. Obviously, he used to charge in, a very quick mover in himself. But it was something that he talked, I know, to the likes of probably Nintini and Pollock about when he was in South Africa, and certainly Lance Klusener. So if you hear your back foot contact and your front foot contact, you'll have a pretty good idea of what your ideal rhythm is, and then you can recreate that. Now, obviously, if you're a bit quick through the crease, then you can then decelerate in your run-up a little bit to get back to your normal rhythm. But he used to say, particularly as the wickets got that bit harder, you could get a feel and also a noise from the dum as the feet would land, and you'll get used to your rhythm, which is, again, incredibly low-tech.
Have we got anything for batsmen?
I was just trying to think of that. I was trying to think batsman, wicketkeepers, and
The wicketkeeper one, the way that the ball hits your glove is straight away. That, you know, it's if it rattles around in there the first couple of times, you think, oh, you know, you've got to switch on a little bit more here. But if it goes straight in, then you just feel like, it's going to be a good day.
You've got that sound as well, haven't you? You know when that double contact, and it's normally the thumb that gets in the way, where you get that that slight double sharp sound as the ball goes into your hands, whether you're catching or whether you're a wicketkeeper, where you get that slight double contact. That's a really good one, which again is all about listening, isn't it? And good keepers generally talk about the sound of the ball going in, so they get that a lot. Desmond Haynes once said to me, as batting wise, I want you to hit the ball half as hard as you want to, and then that would just get my timing, and it would also allow the ball to come to me. So once I did that, it was a good way for me to get into the start of an innings, and then obviously I could expand off of that, but I felt that my timing improved as a result of trying to hit as hard as I wanted. And then another keeping one was when Glenn McGrath played for Worcester. He had a number of games for Worcester, and now their coach Steve Bumpy Rhodes was keeping wicket, and he felt that he was getting wrong footed, so he was getting stuck on his left foot to a right hander and getting wrong-footed against McGrath. So what he'd say to himself to prevent getting wrong-footed, as McGrath let go of the ball, he said inside his head, leg cutter, and it just held his position for that little bit longer, and then obviously the ball would go past the outside edge or nick off in McGrath ways, and he was in a much better position, a much more balanced position to dive for the ball to his right-hand side. So, yeah, he said leg cutter to himself, which just got him into the right mental state, but also, more importantly, the right body posture.
And another bowling low-tech one, which actually I was thinking about the other day, and actually just fits in quite well, is just having a look at the ball, every ball. I mean, standing a bit off or being the bowler and just getting the ball back and just having a look at where you're landing it every time. Really simple way just to see how you're presenting the seam or how it's arriving at the pitch by the time it gets down the other end, because you usually get, especially as the season goes on and the pitches get a bit harder, you're gonna get a little bit of abrasion off the surface every time onto the ball. So you can just get a little bit of feedback as to how the ball is actually travelling down the pitch and whether or not you're hitting the seam or not.
That's a goodie, and I've seen that before, and that actually came up once in a team I was coaching, where one opening bowler wasn't particularly happy with the other opening bowler because he kept missing the seam and kept scuffing up the side that we were trying to shine. So whilst he was getting frustrated with it, he managed to pass it on to myself, and then I started to work with the other bowler on maybe a shift in their grip a little bit, and in fact we got it back round that the other opening bowler at the other end taught his bowling partner just to shift the seam a little bit with a grip that he tried when he was a kid, when he wasn't getting the ball to shape, and all of a sudden this lad started to hit the seam again, and I had two happy bowlers because one was getting it off straight and the other one had a ball that he could do something with when it returned to him at the end of the over. So again, yeah, working on your one there, Sam, it's massively important to keep that ball in, Nick, but also you can use it as a coaching aid, as you say.
Just going back to Steve Rhodes there, you mentioned his nickname, Bumpy, you said.
Yep.
I like a good nickname. It's very rare. It's normally just add a Y on the end of someone's name, and that's, there you go, that'll do for a nickname.
Can I chuck another one in that's a cracker?
Yeah, I've got one as well. Probably everyone already knows it, but, you know,
with yours then.
Steve Waugh, of course, was Tugger.
Yeah, that's good. I like that.
Tugger
Waugh.
Quality.
Quality. There was a guy called Paul Remains, who played for Gloucestershire, and his nickname's Human, which I think is up there with one of the best nicknames.
And one more thing about names, just while we're completely off topic, there was I think in the early 90s, there was a young footballer who played in the lower leagues called Paul Ballpoint, and I was always really disappointed when he never took any penalties.
Very good. Very good.
I always thought the Mondays on Deckies nickname was quite good. Do you remember him?
Yeah, go on. I don't know this.
Oh, Graham Swan decided calling hands on. So it became okay. Hands on Decky.
Very good.
Yes, well done. Well, if you've got a good nickname, because just sticking a Y on the end is just no good. Oh, I've got another one. I've just thought of it. We've got two guys. We've got one guy whose name is who play cricket. One guy whose name is Robert Malt. His nickname's Vinegar.
Nice.
And another guy called Steve Lynn, and his nickname is Vera.
Yeah,
there's a couple of nice ones.
I've got a couple of brothers, who are the collar brothers. One's called Dog, and the other one's called Flea.
Of course they are. But that is quite a long way off the original topic.
Easily amused, though.
So thank you very much, Wolf. That was very good. It took us to all kinds of places. And now this section of the show is the soapbox. 60 seconds on the clock. One person can talk about anything they like. We hope it's going to be something to do with cricket. And this week, it's Sam Lavery. Labours, over to you.
Okay, so I just wanted to have a little bit of a discussion about umpires and not the decisions that they make and all the mistakes we always whinge about, but actually the mistakes we make as players, whether it's as captains or fielders or bowlers, and how we communicate with them and how we get the best out of them. And often people feel like the umpires are on the other team. Well, they can't be on the other team for everyone. So I think we need to be a little bit more educated about how we actually communicate with them. And so often I see players and hear bowlers shouting and screaming, or batsmen kicking the pitch or waving their arms as they're given out. But if we're actually a little bit more polite and a little bit more eager to be on the side of the umpires, then there's a chance that they may be on the side of us. So they're all human. They're all going to react well to a few pleasantries along the way. So a little bit more support of the umpires along the way, and we might find that as bowlers we get a little bit more support back in our favour in the form of a few decisions.
And that is all we've got time for on this week's show. Another cracker. Lots of cricket chat, as always. Now, before we go, though, we're just going to decide on the winner of this week's competition. The prize is the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And we had two excellent questions, one from Vipal about not being able to sleep because he's so worried about bowling off spin. One from Wolf. It was about low-tech tricks, but ended up being about nicknames. So, Gareth, which one did you prefer?
Well, I loved our chat about nicknames, but as a fellow ex, I hasten to add, Insomniac, I'm going to go with Vipal's question about over-analysis, body momentum when bowling, but more importantly, lack of sleep.
Yes. Get stuck into sleep as much as you get stuck into nets. Congratulations to you, Vipal. You win that prize. Now, Gareth, if somebody wanted to get in touch with the show and send in their question, what would they need to do to make that happen?
Well, they could either give us a ring on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. We can also get your tweets if you go to Pitchvision Acad, and you can find us on Facebook if you go to facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. If you want to subscribe to this show, and there's many, many ways, podcatching, playing programs that you can use to subscribe to this show, you can do so and listen to it every week. The main one that most people use is iTunes, but if you don't want to use iTunes, there's lots of other options, including Pocket Cast, Downcast, all kinds of other things. So do a search for the show in there, you'll find us in all of those. But if you want to use the RSS feed as well, that's available if you go to pitchvision.com/academy. Click on the podcast link at the top, you get the details for that feed as well. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Labours. Cheers, Gareth.
Thanks,
cheers,
guys.
Boys.